On this edition of Josh Nason's Punch Out, we talk about Floyd Mayweather going to Ryzen, UFC 230 in review, and also the UFC's 25th anniversary show. We do all that with Josh Gross coming up right now on Josh Nason's Punch Out. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back to the week of Monday, November 5th, 2018. Hope all is well. You're recovered from UFC 230, recovered from Crown Jewel, and ready to look ahead at the rest of this crazy combat sports schedule for the next 2 months. A lot of good stuff coming up, though, so we'll waste no time getting to it. Talking a little bit about, actually, a new addition of that, surprising addition, Floyd Mayweather. Coming back to fight for Ryzen Fighting Championships or whatever it's called. And he's going to be competing against a very young kickboxer who I cannot remember his name off the top of my head. We don't know rules. We don't know weights. We don't know gloves. We don't know anything. But we know that Floyd Mayweather's decided to come back. And that was a big surprise on Sunday night. And obviously we had UFC 230 just happen. Daniel Cormier retaining his title. The path seems to be clear for a fight with Brock Lesnar, rather, the newly crowned WWE Universal Champion. We have some interesting fights, potentially 185, all types of stuff. So without further ado, let's get to my conversation with Josh Gross of podcasting fame, writing fame, authoring fame, actually writing and authoring about the same thing, but you get it. And he and I talked about Floyd and Ryzen. We talked about UFC 230 and some of the storylines coming out of that, as well as a little bit of a look ahead at the 25th anniversary show and even a little soccer writing talk. And I'm not a big soccer fan, but it'll make sense once we start off the show. Note that there's a little bit of an audio buzz at the very beginning, but that got resolved pretty quickly. So just if you know something, just, you know, endure it. It gets better. And you probably wouldn't even notice it until I mention it, right? So without further ado, let's get to it. Josh Gross, Josh Nason, Josh Nason's Punch Out right now. Well, making his triumphant return to the show after nearly a year and a half away from us, we welcome him back with open arms, a man who shares my first name, does it proudly, Josh Gross. And Josh, we'll start you out with this. And, you know, I understand if you need to take a minute to collect yourself after I ask this question, but have you come to grips with what happened to the Los Angeles Dodgers in the World Series that ended just about a week and a half ago?
Yeah, I'm good. I've come to grips. Yeah, Boston was better and we blew the game four. So nice to get there. Nice to get to the World Series. I mean, it was, 2017 was the first time in 29 years, I think. So, you know, to go back to back after that long stretch is kind of wild. You hope they win it, but life moves on in Southern California. It's one of the climate sort of makes us forget about the bad stuff and move on to the next day.
Well, that's true. I was about to say, you know, we're celebrating here, obviously in New England, as we always do. It seems every year we win a different title in some sport or another. However, you guys always have the last laugh because while we're sitting through snow for 4 months, you guys are, you know, 70, 75 and sunny and just laughing your asses off at us, you know?
Yeah. Winter is always coming, I guess. Right. For Boston. That's you can't avoid it, but, for sure. I mean, you've got like a generation and a half now of like spoiled Boston's fans for years and years and years. Other than the Celtics, you guys were like toiling in misery. But it seems like you got it pretty good the last 15, 20 years here.
Yeah, I would say so. That's a big dividing line between Boston sports fans now. There's this younger group who knows nothing about any type of long-term suffering, right? Where there's a group of us that, you know, you get to a certain age that you remember, you know, when the Red Sox lost year after year and the Yankees just continually, that's really what all the, you know, the victim shame, just this feeling kind of comes from, right? And this thing where we'll take title after title because remember how bad it was before, but we are very lucky. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, this stuff is cyclical. So enjoy it while it lasts, Josh. Enjoy it.
I'll enjoy the last 20 years while it lasts. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, let's get an update with you. It's been a while. What's keeping you busy these days and all that?
Poking around the fight world. I spent the last 8 months covering this new soccer team out here in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Football Club. I was a beat reporter covering them, and that was a really interesting experience to be around a sports team, a first-year sports team that did a lot of great things in their first season. They got bounced from the playoffs last week, but that's been a fun ride for me. Otherwise, kind of just watching this crazy fight game and sorting it out from here and there and kind of like taking stock of what's going on. And, I have my interest in some long-term projects that I've been putting time into as far as the fight world's concerned, but, pretty much that. And then, just happened to be on Twitter last night and all of a sudden, Floyd Mayweather's in Japan about to fight this guy, Tenshin Nasukawa. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we get to that, I'm fascinated because I didn't know you were actually writing about soccer. So how did that come about? And then, we'll just start there. How did that come about?
I wanted to do it. This new team was coming to Los Angeles. I had been following along as they went through a lot of steps, started signing players, unveiled their crest, built this amazing stadium in the heart of downtown Los Angeles on the site of where the sports arena was. And the sports arena was something that I was very familiar with because I actually wrote about it in the Ali Inoki book. Muhammad Ali fought there three times. It was a building that debuted in 1962, and that was coming down, and they were replacing it with this amazing soccer stadium. And I grew up really enjoying soccer. I played soccer as a kid, played soccer in high school, and I've always loved it. I always loved like the U.S. men's national team. Never really cared about MLS, but liked club soccer across the world. And having known Brian Martin, who's the managing editor of the sports department for the Southern California News Group.
Yes.
I've known him from the fight game. He covers MMA, covers the UFC. I said, hey, are you guys covering this team? What's the deal? And so they were nice enough to bring me on as a correspondent. I was the beat guy covering LAFC all season, saw amazing things. First time ever wrote about soccer in my life. And I had a lot of fun doing it.
It's covering another sport other than MMA. It is so much different. It is just, it's incredible. I got it in reverse because back when I was in college and after college, I was covering most, traditional sports and, your footballs, hockeys, and even, field hockey, women's basketball, all that type of stuff, where everything's very structured when it comes to media and just how things work and interview time and all that. And you go into MMA, it's just like completely Wild West. So I assume it was kind of, it must have been kind of nice. I would assume that things are a little bit more traditional, so to speak.
Yeah, certainly. Well, look, from a professional journalism perspective, it was nice to have access and have a public relations communications department who wanted to help you with your stories and, help facilitate things for you. I had a ton of access around LAFC and tried to make as much of it as I could. I wrote some really great things. It was nice. I was, one of the main differences for me is that I've written about other sports, but I've written primarily about combat sports, especially MMA the last, 19 years. And that's like really for you, it's like it's like a week and then the event and then you're done and you move on to the next thing. This was 8 months. It was my first chance to really be around a team for a season. You see people develop and evolve over the course of that time. And obviously all the winning and losing, the competing means a lot. And, just to see that whole full arc was something that I hadn't experienced before. I really appreciated that and enjoyed that.
Are they a MLS team?
They're MLS team. Yeah. They, now city rivals, deep city rivals with the LA Galaxy. It's actually amazing. The thing that was created here, LAFC built a culture up very quickly that was passionate and organized and really intense. There's a lot of smart people associated with the building of that team. And I think for MLS, for soccer, for Los Angeles, it was all a positive.
So one last soccer tie in here. So I actually have a link to LA soccer history, a very faint link, but I have one. So back in 2001, I started a Actually, back in 2000, but really 2001 when I went to work in minor league hockey. And it was a team owned by AEG, which is this huge entertainment conglomerate centered in Los Angeles. They're this group that obviously own the Staples Center. They own half the Lakers, I believe, or at one point they did. They own the Kings. They helped build up LA Live, which is kind of this emerging Times Square-esque thing that they're trying to build in downtown. All types of arenas, venues. And Philip Anschutz, who's the who's the head honcho of everything, the primary owner, he when this was, again, back in 2001, he owned half of MLS at the time. And it was so unusual because usually most leagues have a single owner that owns each franchise. But this guy owned, you know, half of MLS and just loved soccer. And then, again, this is, you know, almost 18 years ago. And soccer is in a much different place culturally than it is now. And he was just, he was buying big into it. And I remember we went out there to the Home Depot Center. And it was just this, it was really cool just seeing this whole, like, this whole complex that was built around it. So when you're talking about kind of what it is now, that there's two teams in the city, I just remember how it was such a big thing for them company-wise. And the rest of it was kind of like, why is he so into soccer? But, you know, almost 20 years later, you see, you know, the seeds are starting to grow and there's flowers sprouting up all over the place. Now there's two LA soccer teams. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, they certainly are. And they butted heads. That, you know, it's the El Tráfico now, the Galaxy against LAFC. And they played three times, wild affairs. And no question about it, as you know, AEG still heavily invested in MLS. And you talk about the Home Depot Center, now it's the StubHub Center. It's, you know, they had tons of fights, tons of boxing there. I've seen MMA there. They have like a facility right next door to the soccer stadium. And, you know, LA Chargers are there now. So certainly I think it's grown. It's more on the radars of Los Angeles sports fans than it may have been in the past. I think a lot of people in LA felt like the Galaxy weren't quite LA because they're about 14 miles south in Carson. And they started in Pasadena and then went to Carson. But this LAFC team was like in the heart of downtown Los Angeles. It was a different feel. Well, it'd be interesting to see where this thing goes in the years ahead. Mm.
Well, you mentioned Floyd Mayweather earlier, and I thought of you last night because as impromptu press conference, but basically for those that don't know, I'm surprised that they'd be listening to this and didn't know, but Floyd Mayweather is coming back to a box, we assume, and what a lot of people think is going to be like a four-round exhibition fight against a very young, very talented, undefeated kickboxer at Ryzen's New Year's Eve show coming up here in just a few months. We don't know the rules. We don't know the rounds. We just don't know kind of the whole situation around it. And of course, May assuming that knows it's not going to be an actual kickboxing fight, just because based on how spectacular this kid is, he would just take Mayweather's head off. But still, it's just very, this whole thing surprising. We'll get to that in a minute. But as they're talking about that, they're talking about one of the reporters asked about Ali Inoki, and I made me think of you and kind of obviously knowing Japanese MMA as you do and understanding the culture over there and obviously the Ali Inoki stuff and everything all together. I mean, at this point, I don't know if we can be surprised by these announcements anymore, but I think there was a lot of surprise last night about Floyd Mayweather going to Tokyo on New Year's Eve to fight a kickboxer in when we don't even know the rule set yet.
Tons of surprise, and that was fun. So much of the stuff around Mayweather, there's so much buildup and so many hints dropped in the press and then people on all sides dropping hints, and it just becomes tedious. This was like a ray of sunshine. Like, it was just totally out of the blue for, I think, most people. I certainly hadn't heard wind of it. I haven't been digging, I got to say. I'm not like out there making calls on this stuff, but the people who do didn't have it. And that was super interesting to see a fighter of Floyd Mayweather's stature kind of surprise the world in a way. So that was really neat. And then, you know, just happened to be, I like Twitter. I'm on Twitter a fairly decent amount of time. And like, you know, just to catch the press conference and be able to watch it live as it unfolded and to see the question. I mean, the comparison's obvious, the Ali Inoki. So to hear the questions about it was kind of nice and gave me a chance to plug the book, which I'll always take. But I think that Mayweather, listen to what he's saying. He's saying he wants to be part of a special bout. Listen to what Saki Kibara is saying, who's the former owner, co-founder, owner of Pride, now owner of Ryzen. He was the one who sold Pride to the UFC, calling it a special rules martial arts contest that, you know, not quite boxing, no kicking. I'm expecting boxing with MMA gloves and maybe some sort of, like, you can punch in the clinch, you can hit and hold, kind of stuff like that. That's what my expectation is. I don't know anything beyond that, but that, you know, again, we say all this and you have to take it with some grain of salt. It seems like there's a lot of hurdles. They don't know the rules yet. They don't know what the weight is yet. I'm sure there are going to be markers along the way. You know, New Year's Eve's not that far away, but for them to do an announcement like this, you got to expect that the promotion feels comfortable to do that. They're going to sell tickets off of it and it'll happen. But still, you know, it's the fight game. You never know quite what's going to happen. And if they don't meet his mark, now it sounds like to me that one of the main motivations for this, Josh, is that Floyd is trying to develop his business in Asia and particularly in Japan. He was there in September. There was news reports about him being there in September, trying to lay down the foundations of growing his brand, his businesses in Tokyo and beyond. And, you know, that this would play right into it. I don't know what the financials are. It's hard for me to imagine that they're going to sell massive pay-per-views to this. They'll probably do some, but I don't think you'll see the American press played up the way that he needs to do it to have a big number here. Pay-per-view is not a huge business for other parts of the world. So to me, this is a total classic Japanese New Year's Eve network television play. This is a play for them to get 50 million, 40 million Japanese viewers, and then they'll make the money work. You know, it's like that. That's really the key here. That's what this is all about. The traditional Japanese New Year end network TV slot. And what's the craziest thing that we can pull off to draw a huge rating? And this is going to draw a huge rating in Japan at the very least. And I think for that and the chance now for a company like Ryzen to get their name out globally, I've seen them, you know, talked about more in mainstream press in the U.S. the last few hours than I have in the last 2 years. You know, that kind of stuff. Floyd's not going to do it unless he gets paid, though, right? So we'll see how it all plays out in the end.
Yeah, I'm wondering, the first thing I thought of was, you know, where's the money coming from, right? And how are they going to make money off this? And that's with all these, like, TV deals and streaming app deals and everything that's going on. I'm fascinated by where the money is coming from and if anyone's actually bothering to ask, how are we going to make money off this, right? There's the attraction, but also how do you keep building and afterwards. And Floyd, I assume, is not coming cheap with this, unless he's, to your point about, he has these business interests in Asia and he wants to, and part of this is kind of an investment on his behalf, maybe taking a little bit less, again, pay-per-view wise. I mean, those shows are like the middle of the night, early morning hours here. And that's probably not going to be a huge draw, even with his, you know, his popularity and all that. I mean, we saw what happened last time with Conor McGregor, but I mean, you look at some of the pay-per-view numbers before that with Mayweather alone, didn't really seem to do that well compared to some of the other big stuff he's done. So it's fascinating because it's these fighters now, it's like they're never really retired. It just depends on who's going to give them the most money to come out of retirement. Look at, you know, Liddell and Ortiz coming up, and people just want content. They want people to turn their way and they're willing to invest. But you wonder, like, is anyone actually making any money off any of this?
Someone has to be, you know, can't just be all loser all the time. But, you know, sometimes people are suckers and the wrong people lose their money. And the people who make the money are the ones who seem to have figured it out. So I don't know. And it's hard to, like, really get into the weeds on the financial side, especially with an event like this. So early on, we don't know a ton about it. But it was one of the early questions at the press conference. People were bringing it up. You know, Floyd Mayweather, you can't escape that topic with him. He's definitely someone who has driven his brand around that, literally. So you can't escape it. It'll be part of the discussion. And, you know, for them to have gotten this done, for Nobuyuki Sakakibara to have been at a press conference with Floyd Mayweather saying he's going to fight this 20-year-old Japanese kickboxer who, you know, they're hoping to really build up in Japan. That's an amazing coup. That's just something, just this, that alone is just something really sort of, you have to appreciate that he pulled that off. Now to get Floyd in and figure out these rules, you know, that's a different deal. But I don't know why Floyd would have just done that. Would I have accepted a fight? Would have talked about fighting this kid if he weren't sincere about it?
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you what, as reprehensible a person as Floyd is, he is a hell of a businessman. Him and his team they find out ways to make more and more money with minimizing the risk. And it's been said, you know, a million times, obviously with the whole McGregor stuff, but it's incredible. This guy still figures out a way to keep himself out there, keep himself in the spotlight and keep people interested. And he is quite something. I don't know if we're ever going to see anything quite like him again.
Well, he's one of the greats, no question about it. And as far as you know, making a ton of money, no one's done it better, really. He grew up. This was his life. He grew up this way, thinking about this. How are we going to make money off of this? That was his life, you know. And the answer was always to be the best, be undefeated. Things will come break your way, and that they certainly have.
So UFC 230, speaking of guys making some money, Daniel Cormier did pretty well for himself this past weekend. And, you know, I think at this point, by the time people are listening to us, you know, most of the main talking points about the fight and the event itself have been run through a few times. But is there anything that has not been talked about that stands out to you with kind of the all-encompassing tornado that was UFC 230 this past weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure what the narratives are coming out, like the dominant narratives about it. I mean, obviously DC's a great fighter, completely overmatched Derek Lewis, you know, and there was always that hope that, you know, ninth inning, two out home run ball from Derek Lewis, but that didn't come close to materializing. I think the middleweight division, it was a good night for the middleweight division. I think some welcome additions there. Jared Cannonier, it's going to be a good middleweight, and I'm excited to see him there. And Jacare Cisse's win against Chris Weidman was fantastic. And obviously Israel Adesanya was someone who's getting a lot of attention too, rightly so. He looks very dangerous. I think a good night for the middleweights overall. But no, nothing really jumped out. The card kind of was what I hoped it would be, what I expected it to be at the end of the day. And I think most people felt that. I don't know what kind of business it did yet. I don't think it was a barn burner on pay-per-view. It sure didn't feel that way. But, you know, we'll see what the numbers are.
So in kind of going through the, you know, the press conferences that happened last week and obviously the results and everything, people talk about Cormier and Lesnar, which seems to be inevitability, but obviously people keep bringing up John Jones and potential for a third fight. I keep thinking, though, and Jones kind of alluded to this during his press conference with Alexander Gustafsson, and, you know, I don't know why at this point he's, 2-0 in a sense, but, you know, 1-0-1 against Cormier. I'm not sure why Jones would want to fight Cormier again other than just another, you know, potential good payday, because at this point he's beat him twice, and granted, there's all the controversy about it, but I can see why Cormier would want one more crack at Jones. I just don't know why Jones would want to, I guess, grant that wish.
DC's not even talking really like he wants another crack at Jones. Not really. I mean, you don't hear that coming from his trainer, Javier Mendez. I haven't heard that a lot coming from DC. And yeah, if you're John Jones, I mean, you're probably all right with it. You feel like that's a fight you're going to win. And if you go up and beat DC, I mean, then there's no denying. I mean, I don't think there's much denying that Jones is probably the most skillful, most talented fighter we've seen. Just in terms of a guy with that kind of size who can do what he did. There's not a lot of people in the world who could have beat up John Jones in a fight, right? Mm. So I don't know. I if they can build to a third one, it really depends on Jones. If he can maintain any kind of momentum, he's got to go beat Alexander Gustafsson. And if he does that, and I think he will, I think he'll probably make it a little bit easier than some people might think. But Gustafsson seems extremely motivated, which is dangerous for it. I just feel like Jones is going to come out trying to wreck him. Maybe there's that just competitive bone in DC that I need one more crack at the guy. And that's the thing that'll put him over the top. But it doesn't sound like, it sounds like they just want that payday with Lesnar, walk off into the sunset. DC can go train at AKA the rest of his life and just be as busy as he wants to be. But like you said earlier, there's no such real thing as retirement. So I don't even know what that would mean at this stage.
I know. But Lesnar is the perfect case scenario. This, he's like the almost like an MMA version of Mayweather in a lot of sense. Just, he is just in demand no matter what. He's sitting on his couch somewhere in Canada and WWE wants to pay him a ton of money. UFC wants to pay him a ton of money. And it's, you know, we thought this guy was completely done after dealing with diverticulitis and then coming back. I mean, now he's got two of the best in the sport, both wanting to fight him. Jones talked about the Lesnar fight. And it's interesting though, that you don't hear, or at least I haven't heard a lot of buzz about people wanting to have Jones go up to heavyweight. That was like a big thing you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when he was just busting through everyone. Now it seems to have quieted down a little bit, and we're happy to have him at 205. Do you get that same sense?
I think people just want to see him fight, and they're kind of over everything, like having any kind of expectation around Jones. Forget that. You know, just, okay, let's just see the guy. Let's see him fight. Let's see if he's still as good as we all remember him to be, and then maybe that'll kick up again. But it's super hard to, like, invest any kind of real energy into hopes and dreams about John Jones. I mean, it's, you know, that's he's made that a very difficult thing for fans and media to want to do.
So UFC middleweights, obviously, Jacare Souza, big win for him. Jared Cannonier, who you mentioned. And Israel Adesanya, the guy that a lot of us had seen for this whole year and being very impressed with what he was able to do. I was super impressed when he, I would say, made short work of Brad Tavares, but actually was able to gut through a really impressive win there. I thought Tavares would have taken that, but Adesanya pulling through and then just really making short work of Derek Brunson. And so now the question is, you know, what's next for him? And Dana White saying that they have a plan, or they have an opponent in mind. Of course, he would not reveal who that is. And yeah, you know, I'm looking through these the rankings, which are obviously quite flawed, as everyone knows. But, you know, I'm just looking through and trying to figure out who in the top 10 potentially could be a good dance partner for him. You know, I look at guys like Yoel Romero, and I just wonder if they think that might be too risky for them to have Adesanya go against it at this point. Rockhold is a possibility, but I don't think a realistic possibility. You know, it's guys like, obviously, Weidman's coming off the loss, Gaslam's in a fight, Brunson, Branch, Paulo Costa, Brad Tavares, that's your top 10. And after the fight, there's a guy not ranked in the top 10, not even top 15, who I thought of that might be a good opponent. And then Mark Raimondi actually asked Dana White about this, and of course Dana White was noncommittal, but Anderson Silva came to mind as a potential opponent for Adesanya. Would you be down for that? Would you rather see Adesanya fight someone maybe a little bit further up the ranks?
I'm no interest in that.
Okay.
No, I don't need to see a young, like, sniper fight an old sniper who's too. I just don't need to see it. But we've seen enough of Anderson. If he's going to fight somebody, it's got to be of the name level of an Anderson Silva. And Adesanya's not even there yet. They have to keep progressing Adesanya as a fighter if they really want to make the most out of him. So, you know, we've seen him in the UFC look good. I think there are still questions about him when he faces a real wrestler, someone who's going to be intent on putting him on his back, how he handles that. That's sort of the next step if you want to match him up. It's not sexy name wise, but I would love to see him fight Jared Cannonier. I mean, I think Cannonier is, like, physical enough, dangerous enough. He's just not, you know, I don't know if, you know, to me, it makes sense because if Cannonier beats him, then all of a sudden you've got this guy who came down to middleweight and he beat the hot shot, and he could be a very dangerous fighter. It also is stylistically a tough fight for Adesanya. I think it answers some questions. I like that fight a lot, but I think there's a few matchups at 85 that could work. Nothing too high up the scale. Nothing that doesn't seem to serve a purpose. I wouldn't give him top five yet. I just wouldn't go there. You know, Paulo Costa might be somebody to look at.
I was thinking about Costa as well. I just wonder if they want to, knock off potential young contender at this.
You got to put these guys against one another and give them a chance to not only become better fighters, but appreciate what it's like to fight in a big fight.
Yep.
And then when you put these big young names against one another, you can actually boost them in the long run. I thought the UFC made a mistake by not having Derek Lewis fight Francis Ngannou a year and a half ago. That would have been a fight that would have helped both of them in terms of their ability. And it would have made one of them, like, this amazing contender. Instead of, we got Francis, who wasn't ready to fight Stipe, and then we get Derek Lewis on the backside of that, who clearly just wasn't, you know, up to the level of Daniel Cormier. So I think you preserve the prospects. Well, what, just to be on a poster, or actually, like, try and make them into champions?
Yeah.
And sometimes I think the UFC's approach isn't helpful in terms of making the fighters the best fighters they can be necessarily. Sometimes because of matchmaking, there's factors outside the cage, whatever it is. I think with a guy like Adesanya, who's so gifted, you have to keep pushing him, because what are you going to do? You're going to carry him along, give him just the right style fights until he doesn't have a choice anymore. He's got to fight a real strong grappler, wrestler type. And then what, looks exposed and people are like, I think you have to have him, you have to give him a chance to, when he's in that fight, that he's prepared for that fight. And so hopefully they're a little bit more judicious in the way they matchmake for him.
It's almost like you're describing the ascent of a certain Irish fighter that got pretty popular. What's his name? Conor McGregor. That sounds very similar in that that was a knock against him. You know, no wrestlers, no this. UFC's coddling him along the way. So sounds like you almost just basically laid out that that same plan.
Yeah, look, I don't think it's new or old. I think sometimes it really applies and sometimes it doesn't. When you have a real talent, someone you think the people will get behind and watch, it's, you know, it does behoove you to cultivate that in some ways, not just protect, but try to make better. Because when they're in the big spots and they really do have to wrestle, you know, a lot of the best wrestlers in the world wouldn't be able to handle Khabib, but, you know, it's most people felt coming in that Khabib was going to win because Conor couldn't wrestle him. You know, I don't know how much the UFC did in terms of their matchmaking to really help Conor improve in that area over long in the long term. The one fight people point to is Chad Mendes. Mendes was 45. It was a short notice fight. And, you know, I don't put much stock in that. Everybody's different, though. Everybody's different. So to me, Adesanya, the question mark is the grappling. Can you stay off your – I mean, you're an incredible striker, but if you're on your back and your guard, then what does that look like? I want to see someone do that to him before he's like – in a position where he doesn't necessarily think he has to do that and he can, you know, survive against anybody and he gets exposed. So that's kind of the thinking that I have.
So as impressive as Jacare Sosa was, obviously that awesome fight against Chris Weidman. I feel bad for Weidman, obviously not a good luck charm when it comes to Madison Square Garden. And that was essentially a hometown show for him and has, you know, had the loss against Romero there. And at this point, you know, Weidman still kind of confuses me as far as like where he fits in the whole mix of things. He had those two big wins over Anderson Silva, and there's a part of the fan base that really got behind him. This part that just never really embraced him. It's kind of that whole legend killer thing that happens a lot. And we've seen that with other guys, obviously. And, you know, he gets beat pretty handily here, not pretty handily, but he, you know, got knocked out pretty brutally. The Romero loss, obviously. And I don't know where Weidman goes from here. He's in this weird kind of purgatory in the middle of this middleweight mess now, and no one's really calling for a title shot against him for him. I think he have to get some good momentum going. I just don't see where that's going to happen. I don't know. He's a question mark to me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Certainly, the mistake that he made against Luke Rockhold was massive, and it sent him tumbling. You know, this was a chance to fight Rockhold again and perhaps change that, right? You know, get the momentum back on his side. But I think the middleweight division is very dangerous. There's a lot of parity there. Chris is a guy whose body has not had the best of time in MMA. He's been roughed up a little bit. So, I don't know. He's not that young. I think we're talking about someone who maybe had two incredible moments. And then, you know, things just sort of went the other way for him. He had a lot of great fights, a lot of great wins, but, I don't know. It's hard to see. It's hard to see anyone really sort of exerting themselves over this full division. It might be Robert Whittaker. He might be that good, but he's got to stay healthy. So I'm not sure how Weidman fits into all that. He's still someone who wants to fight, I think, and is very dangerous. Can beat a lot of people, but clearly has, some deficiencies, and you know the way the Jacare put him away was pretty vicious. So you wonder how he comes back, because Yoel Romero was just a nasty finish as well, and those things add up very quickly.
Yeah, my hope for the middleweight division as a whole is that the title gets defended at least twice in 2019. I think it's been a weird division here for a couple of years, and my hope is with Whittaker at the top, and then we'll see what happens from there. We get a few more title defenses and some consistency there. I think that's going to be good. Let's round the bend real quick with this UFC 25th anniversary show, which really does not feel like a 25th anniversary by any means. It's just kind of weird how MSG, which is supposed to be such a big thing, and then the show a week later in Denver, kind of like back-to-back, but there doesn't really seem to be a lot of buzz about the show in Denver coming up this weekend. And obviously Frankie Edgar being knocked out of the main event hurts it quite a bit, but you know, there's some interesting names on the show. It's not really a, you know, top to bottom stack card by any means, but you have the Korean Zombie, Chan Sung Young against Yair Rodriguez main event, Donald Cerrone versus Mike Perry, which is essentially a fan favorite fight in the co-main event. Raquel Pena coming back after that title loss, or the title attempt loss rather, against Jermaine Durandamy, who has been off for a long time, Benavidez Borg, and not a hell of a lot else in this card. Have you even looked ahead at the Denver show?
Yeah, a little bit. I thought about the 25th anniversary too. I get your point. Talking about that last week on a show I do with TJ DeSantis, and he brought that up. He's like, oh, you know, New York would have been the place to celebrate it. And, you know, I kind of felt like, well, MSG championship fights, you know, that's enough to maintain. You didn't really need to overload the narratives with the 25th anniversary when the following week was closer. You're going to Denver. That's kind of a nice touch. I think maybe not a lot of people are going to care. The UFC's done a lot around the 25th anniversary, commemorating it. They've done the documentary series. You know, it's been constant part of their marketing all year. So it does feel a little flat for what they've pushed. But you know, I think hopefully they do a nice job of it. It's 25 years is an appropriate amount of time, I think, really, to give people a chance to look back and see the evolution and feel it. And you have enough distance where you can kind of get the full picture, but it's not so long where you lose some of the major events. I think it's pretty neat. I think it's pretty wild. You know, 1993, this thing just went off, and here we are 25 years later, and it's the UFC's opportunity to celebrate that. I don't think they missed the mark necessarily, but I feel like the public is so used to these big sways from big event to not really caring to big event or whatever it is. We're kind of in that cycle.
Yep. I would agree. What fight are you looking forward to the most, or that you're most interested in, rather?
I think I was looking forward to Frankie Edgar, you know, his fight on the card. And, you know, unfortunately, because that didn't happen, I think it took off some of the luster for me. But, I mean, I understand why people are into Donald Cerrone. You know, that fight is...
It's a fan service fight.
Yeah, look, it gives you everything you want, I guess. And, you know, Mike Perry's people really, his attitude, people appreciate that. I like it. I'm not so into that because I kind of feel like I have a grasp on where their ceilings are. For me, like, my interest in a fight, a real interest in a fight, has a lot to do with the ceilings that I perceive fighters have. So if I think that they have a lot left in their career, they can go on and become great, then I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued. If I feel like kind of a fighter shown the best that they have, or they're on the downside, it's harder for me to become invested. I kind of feel that way about the main event. Korean Zombie is always fantastic. And, you know, if he was going to fight Frankie Edgar, I think we would feel like, wow, that's a fight that could have been amazing. It's a real kind of tough comeback for Yair Rodriguez, but a good showing gets him right back in the conversation. And, you know, that's certainly a possibility, but, I guess those two fights, I'm not sure that there's anything really else that kind of jumped out on me. The flyweight division is so hard to figure out now. It's like they're like on, you know, this slow baton, you know, death march, right? It's like, you don't, it's going to go away. We don't know when it's going to go away, but the fighters still have to get fights. And, you know, what's really happening? I think there might be some decent fights on the Fox Sports 1 portion. Women cap that. Ashley Yoder's a fighter, you know, that's done all right. I think, you know, there's some potential there against a good one with Amanda Cooper. But other than that, I don't know. It feels like a Fox Sports 1 card that we've seen 100 of. You know, it just happens to be around a date that people want to celebrate, they can.
Yep. So final question actually ties into to Fox. So obviously we are coming up at the end of the Fox UFC era, and I was curious what your thoughts are on what stands out to you the most about this, you know, this 5-year run of the UFC and Fox's hat.
I think the UFC has definitely ratcheted up a few notches in terms of their visibility in America, their placement alongside mainstream sports in America. It's certainly been beneficial in all those ways. I think that the fact that we still have so many questions over labor issues and fighter pay, although some fighters busted out and made a huge amount of money, most of them stayed in the same ballpark. I remember specifically speaking to Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta when they announced that deal. I was at that press conference and saying, you know, how will the fighters benefit by this deal? Both of them swore up and down that they would. I'm sure we've seen that in some ways, but in other ways, you know, perhaps not, maybe not to the degree that others would have hoped. And then, you know, I think the sport morphed kind of from a more sporting element to kind of more the entertainment element. You know, that's something really that's come on with Conor McGregor, and I don't know if that's a direct relationship with the Fox deal or not, or UFC or not, or simply the power of someone like Conor McGregor. But that's been a shift too, and you know, we saw Fox be instrumental in some of that, trying to compare McGregor really early to like an Irish Muhammad Ali during, you know, major broadcasts on the NFL. So there was all pieces of that, and I'm very curious to see now when they go to ESPN. If you get an uptick, a lot of fans seem to be, and a lot of media seem to be blasé about so many cards, so many events, so many fights, but we're only going to get more. They're scheduling more and more. So it's, you know, what is the outcome of all that? How do people feel about that? The UFC clearly felt it could be supported during the Fox relationship, and I'm sure they feel no different now going over to ESPN, which, I think is a pretty important step, pretty big step. ESPN has made a commitment now to cover MMA in a way that they hadn't before. And I think that's good for them, and it's good for everybody.
Yeah, I was going to add on to that, and you kind of alluded to it, that I think this, what one of the things that always stand out to me about this is that it fully shoved us into the content era when it comes to UFC, in that they're just more shows. And it's so much content to fill. The pacing of the shows, I think, really is irritated some people, as far as they were so used to the Spike era. And it was just like, you know, bang, bang, bang. It's like, you will show undercard fights, and it will basically make your time sitting in front of this TV as packed as possible, where the FS1 era is very much like one fight per half an hour, just pace and space. And it grinds people out. Main events that start at, you know, 1:30 in the morning, East Coast time. And and again, show after show. And to me, that's one of the things that will definitely stand out the most, is that it fully pulled us and pushed us into the content era. And that is just about more and more, not necessarily what's going to be best for the fans.
Sure. Sure. And we'll see how we come out of that. You know, this, we started talking sort of Mayweather and going to Japan. That's definitely a piece of that. And that's something that he's ushered in a big way. As great a sportsman as he was, you know, he's definitely played to that. And I think we're seeing it at all levels of combat sports. So if that's where the big money is generated, I don't think we'll get away from that. ESPN is certainly going to be interested in ratings and driving subscribers to ESPN Plus, and they're going to want fights that do that. And maybe those aren't the fights that mean much in terms of sports context, and maybe they will be. I hope it's the latter. You know, to me, one of the most compelling fights the UFC can make right now is Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson. Not Khabib against Floyd Mayweather, and not Khabib against a rematch against Conor McGregor, and not Khabib against GSP, but a guy like Tony. We've been tantalized with this already 4 times. I don't know if they'll do it for us, but that's a fight I want to see for a lot of reasons. I think that's a fight that would draw a lot of interest.
Agreed. Hopefully we do see that at some point. So before I let you go, obviously you're a writer, you're a podcaster, you're an author, you do all kinds of stuff, as we've talked about, and I want to give you a chance to tell people where they can consume your art. The floor is yours.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. Sent my podcast, which I do with Jeff Sherwood, called The Outsiders, to Between Rounds Radio, which is I call it a radio network. It's like the old Sherdog radio network. Basically, a bunch of us from the old Sherdog radio network on a Patreon supported radio network. I do a show a week with Jeff, and I'm also bringing back my solo show, Gross Point Blank. And so I'm doing that there. So that's pretty exciting. I like this stuff. This format's fun, and you can really get into a lot of issues, and you know, I enjoy it. As far as the writing side on the MMA, it's pretty slim right now, I gotta say, Josh. I'm happy to always talk about MMA. You know, people like soccer, they can read some of my stuff from the LAFC season, and maybe some stuff moving forward as well. And I'm more focused on some larger project issues, documentary book stuff. Hopefully I'll have more information about that here coming out shortly.
And you could obviously pick up your book on Amazon or wherever books are sold.
Yes, the book, of course. Sees how bad I am at selling myself. the one thing that I do have, yeah, you can go buy the book, Ali versus Inoki, the forgotten fight that inspired sports entertainment. The forgotten fight that inspired sports entertainment and launched. No, hold on, I'm forgetting here. Forgetting the name of my own book. It's been so long. I got to go look this up because I feel like a total asshole now. It's funny.
Let me pull this up now. I can't remember what
you do it for me. I'm terrible.
The forgotten fight that inspired mixed martial arts and launched sports entertainment.
There we go. I was getting them reversed. So inspired mixed martial arts and launched sports entertainment. That sounds better than what I was saying. It reads better than I speak, so go check it out.
And you can hear Josh talk about that both in my show's archives and also on the Wrestling Observer Radio archives with Dave and Brian Alvarez. Josh was on talking about that. Dave is absolutely loved the book. And if you put an Ali Inoki book, one of his tweets actually comes up on the first page.
Yeah, and he's Dave Meltzer is a character in the book. If you want to know what 16-year-old Dave Meltzer was doing watching Ali Inoki, it's in the book. So go check it out.
16-year-old Dave Meltzer. I cannot even picture. Can I even picture that? We'll leave it at that. Josh Gross, big thanks for returning. Congrats on the LA FC gig. That's awesome. And look forward to seeing more of your stuff in the years ahead.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it.
All right. Big thanks to Josh Gross for stopping by. As always, support him, support the book, and big thanks for you stopping by. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day, and I greatly appreciate you spend any time with me or any of the great podcasts here on the Wrestling Observer Podcast Network. And let's see, the week coming up, let's see, what could go wrong this week? Something could happen in the main event for UFC 25th anniversary show in Denver. Hopefully nothing happens in that co-main event. Again, it's a fan service fight. That's what I mentioned on the show with Josh. And by that, it's like when people get like a Kickstarter, but they have these funds going and to try to get their old, this show returns or this character returns or something like that. It's people wanted to see this fight and we're going to get it. So I guess we should be happy about it. Just hoping nothing happens between now and Saturday night, as well as the main event, which should be fun. Zombie is obviously a pretty fun fighter. I think, I think he's still kind of living off some of those fights from a few years ago because he's been so inactive. But Yair Rodriguez has shown to be fun. So, there could be an entertaining main event and co-main event. Raquel Pennington, we'll kind of see where she's at this point in her career. But, it's a free show on FS1, so you can't really complain too much about that. Other than that, it's really just a quiet week. Hopefully, we'll see it. We'll see how it turns out. But we have a crazy, crazy amount of events coming up, both in UFC, WWE. This next 2 months is insane. There's a show, essentially a UFC show, every single weekend. There's a few Bellator shows peppered in there, and then everything's kind of gearing towards their big shows in January. And I think if I heard right, the UFC 2019 calendar is essentially out. It was, and I actually missed this from last night. So January through March, let's see what we got going on here. Let's see. So two events in January. You have the UFC Fight Night, the debut at the Barclays Center, and on ESPN Plus. Then we have our first pay-per-view of the year from the Anaheim, the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. Then February, going to two shows on ESPN Plus and one show on Big ESPN. I think that's one that's going to flip back and forth. So we got Brazil 234 in February. No location announced yet. Actually, two locations not announced yet. That February fight night in ESPN Plus. And then March, we have a big show in Vegas. One, two, three fight nights right back to back in a row. Oh, my God. Look at this March schedule. This 5 straight weeks of UFC. My God, there's just show after show after show after show. That is insane. Josh was not kidding when he talked about a lot of shows, more shows coming up. Aye, aye, aye. Boy, this talent is, spreading thin. Anyway, we won't complain about that too much. We'll see what happens when we get there. But they have some big stuff planned. Obviously, that first one in Brooklyn should be rather entertaining. If I was at the Fox Sports 1 launch in Boston in August 2000 and 2000 what? I cannot remember. It was Chael Sonnen against Shogun Hua. That was fun. There was a lot of fun fights in that card. But it's a fun atmosphere. It was on Sunday night, and if you have a chance, if you are in the Brooklyn area, or if you think about taking a trip, I definitely go. Those ones are usually pretty good. The first night on network. At least based on that first FS1 experience. But, definitely check that out. Usually the card's pretty packed because they want to start off on a good note. So, yeah, two shows in January, 4 in February, and then 5 in March. Good God. Anyway, we'll let you go on that note, and hopefully you enjoy the week ahead. UFC 25th anniversary show coming up on Saturday night. I've not got a chance to check out any of the documentary stuff. I will say, actually, real quick, if you want to check something out, and I know that you may not be a fan of Fox News Channel. A lot of people are not. And I don't really watch it at all for any reason. I watch a lot of cable news other than maybe CNN a little bit. But they had a show called Objectified that aired about a couple months ago, I think. It's Harvey Levin who founded TMZ, if I remember right. So he does basically this hour-long celebrity interview series, and he talked to Dana White for an hour. And there was a few cool things. They went inside this war room that they have at the Performance Center where they have basically every single fighter listed, what if they're coming up with them next fight, their contract, who they're fighting. It basically just maps out the entire UFC universe. I could spend like a couple days in there just like looking at stuff, you know, taking down, looking at numbers, matching stuff out. It looks really, really cool. It's basically just a floor to ceiling whiteboards. It's not like digital or like, you know, like you think like draft boards with, it's actually, everything's really written out. So it's fascinating. So and there's some other things in there too. It's a really good interview. So check it out. It's called Objectified and Dana White. So you find it on Fox News Channel and just, that's about it. So again, even if you don't like watching Fox News for whatever reason, that show was definitely worth checking out for sure. And I think it's only one mention of Trump, which is actually quite impressive. So again, big thanks to Josh Gross. Thanks to all you guys for listening. We will talk to you maybe next week, maybe 2 weeks. We'll see. And yeah, enjoy the fights. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.